Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about many things financial, but we'll probably start off on how the debt crisis could affect you, the federal employee. And to lead us in that discussion is Karen Schaefer, certified financial planner, co-founder of Schaefer Financial. And I'm going to mess this up, but prior chairperson of the U.S. Board of...
Oh, you're close. You're so close. Certified Financial Planning Board, the CFP board. They're the ones that set all the standards for financial planners in the U.S.
And currently the chairperson of the international.
Exactly right. FPSB. We do the same thing, but for... certificates outside the U.S.
Wow. Okay. It's always a pleasure to see you. Karen and I go way back. First time we met was where Oklahoma City and Tinker Air Force Base when Magic Johnson made his famous announcement.
That's exactly right.
I remember it well. Anyway, let's go fast forward to the current. Got a debt crisis. You looked at your iPhone quickly, and the market seemed to be, at least for the moment,
handling it. Exactly.
Okay, so how would one look at this generally with regards to their thrift first and maybe their financial empire outside of the thrift? Do we jump off and run into the G fund?
I'm glad you're asking, because it's been a question that's come up in every retirement seminar for the last couple of weeks. And the assumption is when a big news story about the financial markets is the lead story for so long, you just kind of assume you're supposed to be doing something. But in this case, I would say that most people looking at their thrift savings plan just have to take a deep cleansing breath here and say, I may not like what's going on. I may not like this indecision, but my thrift plan is long-term money, and this is a short-term, somewhat embarrassing spectacle going on, and I really don't need to be reallocating.
Could I just pull one piece of that out so that everybody fully appreciates it? This is long-term money.
It's long-term money.
And that doesn't make any difference what age you are.
That's exactly right. When I teach people about making investment decisions, the most important thing we need to know before we can allocate money correctly is, when do you need the money back? And the real difference in where we start making decisions comes from getting a line between short-term and long-term. And most financial planners, investment advisors are going to say that if you need to spend money in the next 5 years, we better call that short-term money. We better make sure it's nowhere near a market volatility, potential dropping situation. We better, you know, tuck it under the mattress, so to speak. We put it in cash or cash equivalents. We put it in the G fund. But when we go long term, the problem we have is that the cash equivalent, the G fund kind of stuff doesn't grow fast enough to keep pace with taxes and inflation. So you have to take a little market risk with it, and you manage the market risk. You know, markets go up and down. You manage the market risk by not selling on a down note. You say out loud, boy, glad I don't need to sell today. It's a lousy price. It's dropped in value. So when I talk about thrift plan, I know it's somebody's long-term money, because even if I was retiring today, I'm likely, if I'm retiring from the federal government, in my late 50s or early 60s, if I'm reasonably healthy, I might have decades of life expectancy. And my thrift plan is my really cool money. Don't want to spend it first, because to spend thrift money, it triggers a tax. And if I can avoid the tax by spending other money, it means I get to let this money grow even further. So thrift money, even for people who are retiring tomorrow, it's long-term money. We love that.
Yeah. I got a question to put it into terms that maybe I can appreciate. Let's say I'm on a multi-lane road.
Okay.
Around here, they call it the Beltway. Anybody else might be an interstate. You know, everybody isn't in D.C. And I noticed that before I get to my destination, there are a lot of people pulling off, and they're over in the slow lane. So is this kind of like that? You know, eventually I'm getting into the slow lane, and I could have stayed in the fast lane, but I might have missed my exit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dopey analogy, but...
But it's so true. There's a lot written that says, as you approach retirement, you need to get out of the market. And if I could just get an editor with an off-duty editor to go read everything out there and change that to say, as you approach really spending the money, you need to be out of the market, my work would be done. This is my mission in life. Because being a retired person in your 50s, late 50s, early 60s, is probably way too young to be taking all your money out of the market. It's just, it means that you're going to coast, that your money will never grow enough to keep pace with the rising cost of your property taxes, your unreimbursed but required health expenses, the rising cost of your cruise to Alaska. Whatever you spend your money on, it all goes up in price and expense as opposed to your cash.
Okay. There was... let me bring up the phone number, too. You might want to take advantage of this, y'all listening. 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. It's 10:12. It's July 25th, mm-hmm. 2011. Please call us, but don't call us after 10:58. July 25th, 2011, because we're not going to be here, but you can email us. We'll do the email in a little bit, but nonetheless, 202-465-3080. We're here to explain things financially, tax-wise even, and if you're on the ledge, we can talk you off the ledge, I bet.
I'm hoping to.
Okay. So there's another comment that I'd like to make. Years ago, you, me and a guy named Tom Bevington did a session at Excellence in Government. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, and it was called Get Real About Retirement Dollars. And you may remember this. We didn't start off with income. We started off with where do you spend your money?
Yeah.
And we ran through this scenario, and then we said, okay, now here's your money. Do you have a surplus? Do you have a deficit? What are you going to do? What's your time horizon?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you talk about time horizons, I like what you said, too, that, you know, if you're in the market— And some people would say, well, you know, if I'm not in the market, I don't have any risk and I can make 2%. But if I'm in the market, maybe all I'm ever going to make is 5%. That just isn't that much. But over a period of time,
it can be
I think
huge.
It'll knock you off your chair, right?
It does. It really does. And that's what happens. People are trying to keep score on a very short-term basis. They'll say, you know, we had a lost decade. If you really look at a certain 10 years, very recently, a dollar in the C fund looked like a dollar 10 years later. A lot of drama in between, but it really didn't seem to grow. But if I just move a month or two in either direction, I see that, wow, even with all that drama, my C fund made more money than my G fund. So people are a little bit loath sometimes to take any risk because does it really pay off? But if I could make 2% more a year for 20 years, I could end up with, on a very modest amount of money, tens of thousands of dollars more money. I had an example in my head from 1976. It's the year I got out of college. It's where my life changed dramatically. I had to go to work, finally.
Wait, you graduated three?
Yeah, exactly right. So 1976, I bought my Chevy Nova hatchback and, you know, came into the work world. And I look at if I had $10,000 in the G fund, didn't want to take any market risk. 20 years later, I had $41,000, which sounds pretty incredible. I took no risk whatsoever. Every time I looked at the G fund, it was worth a little bit more. Other people, you know, 1987, oh, October-ish, they're, you know, running for cover. And my example cuts off before the really dramatic years in the stock market, the late 90s. So, you know, people look at that and say, why would you ever do anything other than the G fund? Every single day, it's worth a little bit more than the day before and nothing to worry about. The F fund is the one that always looks kind of boring when interest rates are flat. It looks like the G fund plus such a tiny bit, who cares? And it can go down when interest rates go up, right? So why would anybody do the F fund? Over that same period of time, my $10,000 would have grown to $70,000.
But Karen, doesn't the F fund have a lot of government bonds in it? How could it possibly go down?
Yeah, it does. And it doesn't really have default risk. But you see, when I'm lending money, that's all a bond is, right? I'm giving somebody the right to use my money for the privilege of using my money, whether it's a government or a corporation. They pay me a stated predictable interest and then promise to give me my money back when the maturity date pops in. The way we lose money on that is locking in to an interest rate that's lower than tomorrow's interest rate. So if I've lent my money out at 3%, sounds better than that little 0 point nothing I'm getting on my savings account, but interest rates start going up, I may start realizing, ooh, we're getting a little bit more inflation than we've had. Everything's costing more. My 3% doesn't look that great. I go into the marketplace trying to sell my bond that pays 3%. Everybody else is buying the same kind of bond paying 5. So I can sell it, but I take a real hit on that. The value has dropped. And while my example is pretty simple to follow, the marketplace, it's even more dramatic than that. The talk of interest rates going up can send a shudder through something like the F fund and just say, we don't want those kind of bonds anymore. We want something really short-term, lower grade, higher yield, or back to stocks.
Okay. One more thing. Let's peel back the onion with regards to the G fund.
Mm-hmm.
I get calls. I get emails. I have one favorite emailer, I would say, from outside the area and sends me these awful articles and whatnot. But if I'm not mistaken, the G fund funds are taken from one's salary to go into the thrift, of course. Once inside the thrift, the money goes to the Treasury. Let's say that the Treasury cannot borrow any more money. They can't borrow money that's in the proverbial G fund.
Yeah.
It goes as kind of a memo entry, and it sits there. And when Congress raises the debt limit, or doesn't raise the debt limit, it just sits there. But when it does, it earns interest as if it was invested, but it cannot be borrowed. It can't be borrowed.
Which is sort of hard to noodle through at first. I'm getting a lot of questions in classes about people thinking, oh my gosh, the government's going to take all this money out of the G fund, and because they're out of money if they can't raise the debt ceiling. So where do I go now? And it sort of means we don't understand what the G fund is to begin with. When you put your money in the G fund, what you're really doing is telling the federal government, have at it. You're giving your permission to the federal government to use your money, and for the privilege of using your money in the G fund, they pay you whatever the interest rate is at the moment. And there's no maturity date, so if you ever want your money back, there it is. Right now, we don't really have to worry about this debt ceiling conversation going past a deadline and people waking up one morning to find an empty hole where their G fund money used to be, because the federal government wouldn't be allowed to use it. They'd simply be required to say, oh, gosh, there it is. Wish I could have it. I still have to pay interest on it, and I can't even use it, because that's what the G fund rule is. So relax on this G fund thing during debt ceiling conversation is the message I'd like to get out. But it also allows you to rethink it. Why do I have money in the G fund? Okay. It's nice to have some peace of mind. It never drops in value. Even through a debt ceiling crisis conversation season, it's still going to be there. But on its best day, it never grows to meet a long-term goal. So you can't ignore that part of the G fund. It's a beautiful thing. But where does it fit in your financial plan if this is long-term money?
Okay. Let's shift out of the G to any one of the other ones.
Okay.
And let's trace that money again.
Okay.
Salary checks reduced, cash goes to Treasury, and then it goes into the market. So this concept of they can borrow money from my thrift, it's not there to borrow.
Exactly right.
Am I right with that?
Once we're past the G fund, now we're talking about, you know, welcome to the real world. This is not just an instrument for federal government employees. This is, you're joining anybody else who had a 401k, 403b, a couple of bucks that they wanted to just throw into a mutual fund. The F fund is in a bond market instrument that I could go buy with my IRA money. The C fund is, C, S, and I actually are all in stock market funds that I could go buy with my own money outside of the thrift plan and get exactly the same kind of investment. So we're done with unique, and we're into, oh, this is what everybody does with their money. The money's not sitting at the thrift board piling up. It's actually buying stocks or bonds.
Which is in the person's best interest, so it doesn't
Absolutely.
Sit on the sideline. It's going to get in hot water, it's going to get in cold water, but overall it's going to be
over,
nice water.
Long term, the trend is up, and that's what you have to remember. I would also say that, you know, I hate it when the markets are the lead stories, because people just keep thinking they have to do something. Did the markets open low overseas, I should find my PIN number, and as soon as the markets are opening here, I should be moving out of the market. Or I should remember that if I move out of the market, I got a tough decision. When do I move back, right? How am I going to figure that one out? And if I just would have left it, money coming out of my next paycheck would have bought in at a really good price. Buy low, sell high really is the best investment strategy. Everybody knows that. But if I'm trying to overthink this, I'm probably selling when it's already dropped, because I can't be on top of it every single moment, and I'm probably getting back in when it feels better, which means a high price. Exactly the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Relax.
Okay. Now, for those, you know, we've pushed this out, but there are probably some still listening say, that's true, but I'm close to the finish line, mm-hmm. I'm gonna use my analogy of the highway, and I'm over here on this other lane, but part of my car can continue going. I just have to get off on the stop. I can catch up with my money later. But I ought to have it there. But if somebody was really anxious to pull their money out of whatever the performance was, then they're going to probably head towards the G. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the difference. And we talked a little bit about this in the proverbial green room. But money, if you take the difference in earning power, let's say the difference between 2% and 4%, better yet, 2% and 5% is 3%.
Right.
Okay, if you divide 3 into 72, doesn't that tell you how long it takes for that money to double?
Exactly right.
Okay, so if I was earning 5 versus 2 over a period of time, I divide 3 into 72, that means my money would have doubled.
Right.
In that period of time.
Right.
Now, that's a long time. But we don't need all that money right away, even if we are my age.
but more importantly, you will need money 20 years into the future, into retirement. And I think that's what, unfortunately, a lot of us aren't really focused on. We're focused on, I'll get a pension or a pension plus a Social Security check, and I won't be putting money in the thrift plan, and my commuting cost goes down, and I think it all works, and then I can be pulling money out of the thrift plan when I, you know, buy my cars and take my trips or spoil my grandbabies, and I'll be fine, because, you know, I'm a young, healthy retiree, and you know, it's my money, and I'm going to spend it. And I've worked a long time. I've been working for like forever, and I'm going to spend this money without regard to what I see. I've been doing this for a long time, over 30 some years. And one of the things that I started to notice early on was people aren't dying like I was led to believe they would. I was taught I should help my clients plan for 20 years of retirement. My first advice was given in 1978, and most of our first-generation clients are still living, which is pretty phenomenal. And I also thought, I really thought I should figure out how to do this for clients, to have active clients spending more money, get it off the bucket list, you know, and then kind of coast into a more modest spend down as they retired. But I've been watching something pretty interesting. It's expensive to get old. And it's really nice to have enough money to be able to pay people to do things for you. I might not be one of those really sad cases where I'm really, really ill and I really need the round-the-clock critical care. I might just lose my vision to macular degeneration, have an incredibly active, healthy mind, and need somebody to take me to the grocery store, take me to my doctor's appointments, make sure that I'm safe in my home now that I really can't see. And that costs money. I don't necessarily want to give up all of my independence, but I will have to if I don't have any money. So the message is, be sure that we make the money work for us, make it grow while we can afford a little bit of market risk when we are looking at these decade-long horizons. And let's not get too wrapped up around day-to-day, up and down, who knows what the market will close today or open tomorrow. Don't need to know that.
Okay. With your focus on the medium to the long term, if somebody was really anxious about U.S. investments, are there any places or general funds that you like that aren't necessarily U.S.-based, although a lot of U.S. companies are really multinational companies?
By now.
But anyway, I'm in your world and I don't belong there. So.
Oh, come on in. It's not so bad. Yeah, it's actually pretty easy these days to invest in companies that are based overseas. International investments were few and far between in the late 70s, early 80s, exploded a bit in the 90s, as did everything else, and now come in quite a wide variety, but not in your thrift plan. In your thrift plan, what you have is one choice, and it's the EAFE index, which tells you exactly where you're investing. The first E is for Europe. The first A is for Australia, Asia. It's a made-up word, but it tells you what part of the world you're in. And then the Far East. So you can go to the thrift website and or just Google EAFE and learn exactly what you've got in there, and then make a judgment call. Well, are these the kinds of economies? Are these the portions of the world where I really think the next bit of growth is going to be, or where I have a better opportunity than in the U.S.? They're all going to be large companies, which by definition are a little less aggressive than medium or smaller companies, and make your decision that way. If you wanted to be investing in strictly emerging markets, you can find now mutual fund investments that do exactly that. If you wanted to be invested just in Brazil, for example, you could find a mutual fund investment that would take your handful of dollars and invest simply in that. But every time you narrow the focus of your investment strategy, by definition, you're being more aggressive when we're talking about stocks. The wider variety of stocks I have, the more diversification I have, the more opportunity to let some losers be offset by some winners, or just hanging on, being decent kind of stock returns. So I don't know that everybody should be looking for that kind of investment, because everybody can't get their arms wrapped around, hey, I'll take as much risk as possible now, and later on I'll dial it down. A lot of people are human and will say, it seemed like a good idea at the time, but, you know, Brazil was doing just great, and now what happened to it? Or, you know, another part of the world was doing just great, and it has a regime change, or we have a currency risk. So I think it's wise for people to just think of it longer term and understand that, yeah, some of my money abroad makes a lot of sense, but it's not going to be the answer to everything.
Besides listening to shows like the one today and maybe going to a retirement seminar, especially for the financial planning side, as that's our focus today, how does the average person that listens to this say, I kind of sort of understand, how do financial planners work? I understand there are people called fee-only and then there are money managers. So, I mean, we go to a mechanic to get the car fixed. We go to somebody, if we don't want to cut the grass, they cut the grass. And this stuff, for most people, is another world.
Right. And so what I tell people, if you're going to try and hire help for anything to do with money, it would really be an important step to take the time on a personal level before you're out shopping for advice and get yourself organized so that you really could articulate what it is you're looking for. What happens is, it doesn't take long for somebody to realize, it might be nice. I wish I could bounce this an idea off somebody, or I need a technical answer, or I need some ongoing advice here. But they're not really sure what they want, and they go into the marketplace, and I can assure you that you don't have to go very far, but somebody's ready to help. But it could be somebody who, you know, is kind of a one-trick pony. Could be somebody with a real conflict of interest that might not be fully disclosed. And you end up having paid some money and still you got your question. So if what you really wanted was a little more education, I'd like somebody to really hold my hand and give me a tutorial. That to me would be different on fill in the blank, on what's the best thing to do with my thrift plan when I leave the federal government, or what's the best way to handle my thrift plan in light of the fact that I still have some 401k money from a previous employer and I finally got the kids off my payroll and I'm starting to put a little money in IRAs, and should I or shouldn't I be doing conversions? Okay, those are my questions I want some help with. Then I don't need much more than that because I kind of understand the underlying investments. That would be very different from some person who says, I understand it all right, and I understand I'm not good at it. Because no matter how many times I tell myself, don't sell when it's down, I'm like the queen of selling it when it's down. It's just, you know, exactly wrong. I want somebody else. I want to delegate that decision-making or non-decision-making, for heaven's sakes, to somebody else. Well, those would be very different things. The first person I'm describing really might just want to pay for a couple hours of billable time. The second person I'm describing probably really should be paying for an ongoing money management arrangement. But whatever it is, as long as you can articulate what it is you want, now you can go into the marketplace and ask people, what qualifies you to give me this advice and how much is it going to cost? Don't rely on marketing terms. I'm a financial planner. I'm a wealth manager. I'm a something or other consultant. Really, use your common sense here. Bob, what qualifies you to give me tax advice on my voluntary contribution? Well, you can prattle it off. All your experience, your CPA, yada, yada, yada. It would make sense. And then I'd want to know, so how much are you going to charge me for that? Right? Mm-hmm. It makes sense. And it's because accountants have been around for a long time. CPAs have been around for a long time. Certified financial planners haven't been around that long. It's a profession that's still emerging. But because it's such a great idea and everybody at some level knows they could benefit from a little bit of help, marketing departments in the insurance world, the investment world, the accounting world, the debt management world have all glommed onto this, let's call it financial planning. So a consumer really should just back down a little bit and say, what do I need? And then go out and quiz a potential advisor. What qualifies you? Are you a certified financial planner? Do you work with federal government employees? How long have you been doing it? What don't you do? Because none of us are omnipotent. We have to have a network of people that we refer others to. And how much is it going to cost? How do you make money doing this? If the only way I can make money is selling you an insurance product, I might be very nice. I might be very ethical. But we might not have a fit here because you don't need an insurance product.
Okay, so let me play tennis with you. I've just joined the federal government. I'm young. Maybe I'm out of school. Maybe I'm not. But yeah. I don't have any, you know, I don't have a family yet. Not that everybody's going to have a family. I don't want a family yet. I want to make up for the years that I was in school, whether it's high school, whether it's college. I got a few bucks now. I want to go out and buy a car and rock and roll. Karen, what do I do?
Yeah.
I'm smart enough to know I need to talk to you, but yeah. I don't want to hear what you're going to tell me.
Yeah, I know you don't, but it works great. If I could get, and I just did a class not too long ago, they were all first, right out of school, first jobs, but they were coming in at a pretty okay salary for the federal government. And if one person wanted a car, they all wanted a car. And I said, I need you to max on your thrift plan first before you buy a car. And they looked at me horrified. Maxing on the thrift plan is $16,500. Excuse me. I said, no, it's not, because you're going to get your tax refund. It's closer to 10. You can manage that. And they're still kind of balking at it. And I said, all right, I'll make you a compromise. Let's just talk about the kind of car you can afford, the kind of car you need, as opposed to the car you want. You know, I want peace on earth, too, and I really, really want it. I'm not getting it just yet. So let's talk about the kind of car you need and the kind of car that you have to have. It needs to be reliable, not the car you deserve. The car you deserve is pretty rock and roll. So, and let's talk about buying it smart. So do you have any trade-in value? If the answer is yes, write that number down. Do you have any down payment money? If the answer is yes, write that number down. And then how much money do you think you could borrow and get paid back in 2 years without sacrificing huge money going into your thrift plan. We've got to be putting money in the thrift plan, even though OPM says it's optional. It's not optional if you ever want to have options in life. So add those three numbers down. How much could you borrow, down payment money, trade-in value? That's your price range.
Okay.
That's the amount of money you can spend on a car.
How much can I borrow from my thrift? Because I can borrow it at 2%. I can't do that?
Well, you can borrow money from your thrift savings plan, but not for a car.
Okay.
Oh, well, actually, technically you can, but not if you want
to
have...
Not if you're talking to you.
No, not if you're going to... I'll bend my don't even think about borrowing money from your thrift savings plan to buy something rule for a young person who is doing their once-in-a-lifetime first home down payment, right? Because every once in a while, somebody will say to me, and I understand it completely, I would love to be putting $16,500 into my thrift savings plan. I don't have other responsibilities to other people. It's just me, and this is a time in my life where I can save aggressively. Might not always be able to do this if I have responsibilities to others. But what if I want to buy a house? If I put all this money in the thrift plan, I will never be able to build down payment money. And I always say, put it in the thrift plan, because if we really did need to buy a house or want to buy a house and we were a little short on the down payment, we can take I think it's reasonable to take a once-in-a-lifetime loan against the thrift plan for something that's once-in-a-lifetime and you're young to the federal government and young chronologically. So you're in your 20s, maybe very early 30s, I might be able to justify a once-in-a-lifetime loan against the thrift plan for that first home down payment. But that's it. What has really happened, I've told a lot of young people to do that, so they've dutifully maxed on their thrift plan, and there were lots of first home buyer programs out there where we didn't have to use the thrift plan. So that worked pretty nicely. I don't know if they'll be out there in the future, so sort of hedging the strategy a little bit, I think, is reasonable.
Okay. Now, those of you that heard Karen talk, this is not Karen's rule. This is a good rule. This is not the thrift rule. It's not
right.
Once in a lifetime you can only do it.
You can do it
somewhat.
Well,
but what's Karen saying?
Yeah.
Don't do it but once.
Well, but there's so many rules like that. You know, people get confused that just because they let me doesn't mean I should. Right? Just because I'm eligible to retire at 57 years old doesn't mean I can afford to retire. Just because tax law says I can take the money that I put in my Roth IRA out at any time doesn't mean that's a good idea, right? So that's the message whenever you're reading what the rule is. I think it's prudent to know what the rules are, but let's not get confused about the conclusion we draw from them.
Okay, now in our tennis match, set two. I bought the house. I've been in it a few years. Maybe there's a significant other in my life. Maybe there isn't. I'm making a few more bucks. I'm comfortable with my mortgage payment. I kind of like your idea about the car. I didn't like it when you told me that 3 years ago, but I understand it now. Mm-hmm. Where do I go? I'm maxed out with my thrift. Maybe I got a few extra bucks.
The next place we always go with money that we can think of as long-term money is the IRA. The amount of money that I can put in an IRA is $5,000 until I'm turning 50, and then it's six. And the only requirement is that I have a job or I'm married to somebody with a job. So an individual retirement account contribution makes a lot of sense. It's another one of those use it or lose it kinds of opportunities. So we always want to go there with the next couple of bucks that we can have. I don't have to have a full $5,000 before I start doing it. From my point of view, I'd be doing it if I thought I had an extra $500. Because once the money gets into an individual retirement account, no matter how I invest it, I don't have to pay any tax on the interest, dividends, or capital gains while it sits in there. And I may not have to pay any tax when I even take it out if I'm eligible for a Roth contribution. The Roth IRA that came about in the late 90s allow people to accumulate money on a tax-free basis. The issue of whether or not I can make a contribution is going to be based on how much money I'm making the year I'm making the contribution. a lot of federal government employees are actually eligible to make contributions right into Roth IRAs. Discussion done. Pick a little investment that complements but doesn't replicate what you've got going on in your thrift plan, probably a no-load mutual fund with a growth objective. Open it up. Good to go. Next year, if you feel you have another couple of bucks, put it in there. Next year, got expensive on you. It just sits there, continues to grow. Sweet. If I can't make my contribution into a Roth because I'm making too much money, according to tax law, I won't grumble out loud about it because that would be rude, but I'll make my contribution into a traditional IRA.
And if you go to one of our seminars or listen to our show from 2 weeks ago, we can show you how to get that into a Roth, even
exactly.
though you think you couldn't. But that somebody should listen to that. We won't do that.
It's called a conversion. It's not a religious experience. But, really, a lot of people can do it. So, yeah, go look it up. It was a good show.
Okay, Dr. Karen, I'm now a few years older. Somebody is in my life. And I forgot to invite you to the wedding. But not only did I get married, but there's a third person in the house. Now, I don't quite have what I had before because these people eat and they want a bigger car.
Right.
What do I do?
Right. Don't panic. But if I can get people, I call these things little speed bumps in the financial plan. It's not very few of us got into the workforce, made a little bit more money every year and had easier and happier financial choices every year. Overall, we want your plan to be on track, but we do have to sort of set down and say, what does this really mean? I've got a child, I've got to pay for daycare, or my significant other is going to be out of the workforce for a while. We really do have less money to work with. And yet, if I can get people to analyze the cash flow a little bit, what's really going to happen? Don't just keep your fingers crossed and hope it's all going to work out. Keep the thrift plan contributions going, but avoid accumulating debt. We now have a solid financial plan. When a child comes into the picture, though, one of the first things that anybody is worried about is how are we going to be able to pay for an education? And I always counsel families, keep the thrift plan going, even thrift and IRAs, before we start setting money aside for the college thing. Because even though education is not really an optional issue in the 21st century, I can get a kid educated, even if they really don't have money. I can't get somebody comfortably retired if they end up with a health issue in their late 50s, early 60s, and they haven't been saving in the thrift plan.
Okay, I'm back at the door now. A little less hair, some gray. I'm within the, I can visualize the finish line. I don't know if I want to go across it, like you said before, finish line being retired. I've grown over the years, and I understand, I want to retire, but, another year is going to give me another X percent, whether my income is flat or not. Maybe I have a step increase. And the like, and I need now to get back to the beltway. I don't know what exit to get off. And I come back to say, Karen, everything's good. Spouse is fine. If there is a spouse, children are great. I've been lucky. I followed your advice. But now they're starting to peel off, maybe the kids, hopefully not the spouse, and because they're going to take a piece of the annuity with them. But that's not going to be the case. What do I do, Karen?
Yeah. Obviously, if we just look at the numbers here, every year you work really is to your advantage. There's this myth that floats out there that says, at some point, I'm working for nothing. But you're not, because every time you work, every year you work, or every month, every day you work, we're putting a little more money into thrift. So there does come a time where we have to stop looking at this formula and accumulation and really be honest. Okay, it's not all about the money. If we've done a great job with the financial plan through somebody's career, we now know they can afford to retire. But we also know that 80%, this is pretty huge and significant, of retired people are either working or wanting to work part-time. It's not just money. There's something about having a purpose in life. And even though your federal government job may have never felt like your purpose in life, it's occupied so much of your time that maybe there hasn't been enough time for some other things to bubble up. So the first thing I like to talk to people about is, well, what would you really do and what do you like and how would you go about figuring that out? And could we hold on to this job while we do figure that out? because too many people are saying, you know, I've worked my whole life, I'm a little burned out, I want to retire, and they're getting kind of depressed or unhappy, grouchy old men, you know, they make movies about these people. I'm telling you, it's
Sophia Loren. I didn't be grouchy.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's something we should be thinking about, Bob. And it's just easier to think about and do right if you start this process while you're still working and try to create what would be the next piece of your life. The good thing about thinking it through and trying it out, if you really don't like it, at that point we can change. There's no more golden handcuffs. You don't have to look for your MRA anymore. You don't have to get that 30 years of service. You got that already. Get out there and try something. The other thing is that even though I could tell somebody at age whatever, they're leaving the federal government, everything looks good, you know how life is. It arrives unannounced, even in the best laid plan. We've got to have some flexibility here. And one of the pieces of flexibility I just love to see is the ability to earn a little part-time income, just in case one of your kids gets bounced out of a job or one of your grandbabies has one of those very expensive special needs situations. What would you want to do? I just told you your retirement is great. 3 years from now, we have a special needs grandbaby. Money helps in those situations, doesn't it? And wouldn't it be nice if we had the flexibility with a little part-time income to be able to stabilize that family situation? Or wouldn't it be nice if we had the ability to be able to be a little more self-sufficient when something happened to us that causes more expense than we had really anticipated, looking at the very realistic average expenses for your household? So I like to hedge that retirement decision for people who are going out in their late 50s, early 60s with, if we had to, could we make a little bit more money? If we don't really need to do that, sweet. But it's expecting too much to be self-sufficient for 30, 40 years if we actually know how life does play out.
Very good. We walk through one's lifetime, if you will, mm-hmm. up to retirement. And we've been around 28 years now, close to 29 as a company. And some people, I'm sure you got these people years ago, I got them, and fortunately they've stayed with us. And they're generally mm-hmm. very appreciative. I'm not trying to sell us or the company. What I'm trying to say is go to a mid-career, go to a beginning right. career, go to a pre-retirement seminar. Your agency may or may not have one. We just happen to be in the business for it. Again, I'm not shilling for the business, but any questions, you could just email it. NITPINC.com. You go to see a website. You can listen to this show if you tune in about 2 p.m. this afternoon, and you're going to listen to it for the next 4 years. Although Karen and I will probably do another one. Tammy's GovExec articles are on there. And just, we have an article of the month, and it's all free. Mm-hmm. The agencies pay us to do the seminar. And again, we're not trying to push, you know, this is the Trojan horse to get into the agencies. We're very fortunate that we have lots of work. But there are others out there that do seminars. Of course, you shouldn't go to theirs, but you should go to ours. Nonetheless, what I'm trying to say is get the help. It's not like going to the shrink. I don't want to go to a shrink. You're a money shrink. I'm a tax shrink.
Right.
And I would say, and I bet you would say the same thing, but you're not going to. A lot of times I'm dealing with psychology. They want to know yes or no.
Right.
But then once they get the answer, you got to pull them back in or push them out. Not out the door,
but that's the fun part, isn't it, Bob? That's the fun part of the kind of work that we do, and what makes our work effective. We're dealing with real people. We're not giving generic advice. We're going to ask enough clarifying questions to find out that, you know what, even though I personally might not want to have much of my money in the G fund, it would be really bad advice for me to tell every single person they can't have money in the G fund right now. Some people really need a bit of money. It's a peace of mind. It's an emotional, it's a human behavior. We give advice to humanoids. So that's an important thing to keep in mind when you're making your retirement decisions. It might be interesting to chat with your colleagues, but it won't be and shouldn't be the valuable piece of information that makes up your mind, because you're an individual and you have to be honest about what really works for you and where you've made your personal behavioral mistakes and see what we might need to do to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Yeah. And although we're very good friends off the mic and outside the classroom, there are a few memories I've got. One is you. Many years ago, we were on the show, and I was talking about inflation at retirement, and you just stopped, and you looked at me like the RCA dog, and you said, Bob, inflation doesn't stop at retirement's door. And I'll never forget that. And another one was Dr. Michael Creedon. We were talking like you were saying, what are you going to do when you retire? And I said, I've always wanted to play in the NBA. And he looked at me and go, second choice?
Yeah, might need that. It is true. You know, that whole inflation topic is one that I think people need to be a little bit more serious about. Even if we just have the kind of fairly low inflation that we've been having for a long time now, healthcare costs have ignored those low inflation rules. My property taxes kind of ignored them too, quite frankly. And deficit reduction behavior will ignore it. So I have to know I'm going to face my whatever I think I'm going to spend my first year of retirement, I will probably need twice as much to do exactly the same thing somewhere between year 15 and 20 of my retirement. And that means I don't spend all my thrift plan in year one. That means that I don't take all of my investments and put them into cash just because I'm Ms. Retired Person with a little umbrella in my cocktail at 5 o'clock. You know, I've got to make my money work if I'm going to have some choices so that I can say, yeah, inflation's back. Glad I have enough money to pay $4, $8 a gallon gas, because that's what it'll be in my lifetime at some point.
And we'll still be there teaching. We'll be the last one standing. Fortunately, we don't have high overhead. We love what we do.
Yeah.
And people can ask us questions. We get an awful lot of email, but one of the places you can email us a question is the name of the show, For Your Benefit, F-O-R-Y-O-U-R, benefit, at NITPINC.com. We don't farm emails, we don't sell emails, and we don't sell a thing as a company. For Your Benefit at NITPINC.com. But how does one get to Karen Schaefer or Schaefer Financial or both?
Well, Schaefer Financial is Karen Schaefer and Rick Schaefer, who does most of the day-to-day work. Both of us certified financial planners, and we're in Rockville. And the easiest way to reach us is just picking up the phone, 301-933-5550. And that's in Rockville.
And you'll love, I mean,
we
there's,
do.
There's no errors here. You know, normal people. I've known Rick probably two less days than I've known you. And both very affable and a pleasure to talk to, but at the same time, zeroed in on the prize.
Well, we do like to solve problems, and we do like to get people out of a guessing game and give them really sound financial planning advice. Bob, have you been getting this question at all? I had a few people in class who are just worried about the rumbling going on about they might take a high 3 to a high 5. And is that a game changer for somebody making retirement decisions? Are you hearing that?
It's a good question, and actually, let me pull it out here, because there was an article, and I hope I don't butcher the last name, John Grobe, while a competitor, a nice guy, and he wrote an article on what the difference between the two would be, and if I'm quoting him right, and I trusted that I am, let's say somebody has a high 3 of $100,000. That's a lot. So for those of you all saying, well, mine's only 50, just divide my numbers by half, or if it's 75... multiply it by 75%. So I'm using it as a baseline. And the high 3 under CSRS for this person would be $58,818 based on their assumptions. If they were FERS, it would be $31,370. Let's write that down again. High 3, $58,818. FERS, $31,370. Now that's high 3. If it went to a high 5, the CSRS would drop to $57,949. In other words, a drop of about $870. Now, this is annually. And the first person would drop to about 30,906, about $465. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that's no big deal, but it isn't really dropping as much as what I just quoted because there's tax issues.
That's exactly right. And so when I look at those numbers, I would say to somebody, you're right. It is less. Then your high three does drop if we go to a high five, but not in any material way that would change my advice to you about whether or not you can afford to retire. And that's really what we're trying always to decide. When we look at the high three years of service calculation, we're looking at it to see whether or not you can afford to retire. If it was a high five, the difference in your pension is so small, it's not going to be the game changer. What will be the game changer is how much debt do you have? Are you still relying on debt? And or the other one that we have to look at is how much did you put in thrift? Because if you've been underfunding thrift, screwing up with being way too cozy with debt, you're not retiring. This change in going from a high three to a high five isn't going to change my advice at all.
Great. And this has been a great show for its purpose, of course, because you've been on. But next week, Mike Causey is going to come in here with Tammy. And we've got now the 1 week that's going to bring around a resolution or not. So we're going to be able to talk about how it would impact the budgets with regards to a federal employee, high five, high three, if there's an issue there, as well as others. So this is really a two-step dance. It'll take you around the dance floor. So, Karen, a pleasure as always.
Oh, the pleasure's mine, Bob.
And hope to see you soon. The rest of y'all, we'll be back next week and spread the word. You can listen to this archive 24/7 for the next 3 years if you want, and you probably should. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.